Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Welcome to the Weird Things podcast. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Brian Brushwood.
Hello.
Justin Robert Young.
Hi.
And our producer, all-around awesome guy, Bryce Castillo.
Hi, everybody.
I like how he just pops his little video square into there right as we say his name.
Look, we don't call him just a regular producer. He's a super producer extraordinaire.
Right. Yeah, I think he's like waiting to see like if Andrew forgets me, I don't pop my video in here.
Yes, that's quite literally what he's doing. That's why he's a super producer.
I know Andrew's never forgotten since he's done this, but just one
just
day.
In case.
Just in case.
We'll be like 20 minutes in, like, something's missing here.
I'm just over here like,
I'm wearing a red shirt today. Gentlemen, it's funny because Bryce sent me four stories from the listeners. Three out of four. We're in the bin here. We're in the bin. So it's very, very, I think we're in sync with our audience is what I'm saying. So
that's good.
One and one.
So yeah, I can always tell the story's about to be good when Bryce reaches around the corner and turns off the only monitor that I could see where he's setting up the story.
The preview monitor.
I am blissfully ignorant.
I'm going to start with the one that, did not land on my radar. And, it was brought to us. This was suggested by as a case for Spiro and the Fudge.
Oh, this is by RJ. RJ sent this in.
RJ sent this, and so I don't know if you guys know this story at all. If you don't, it's going to be really, really good. If you do, it's going to be very, very, very short. Okay. So let me pull up the actual story here. Sorry.
Snakes.
Yeah, the answer is snakes or spiders. Spiders. Spider snakes. Snakes with spiders for arms that are actually ghosts. That's the answer.
Yeah.
Lock it in. Lock it in.
But also, the prequel that this is how they made a goblin for the first time.
That's right.
All right. No. Wrong. Crime story, gentlemen. It's crime. We need Spiro and the Judge on Spiro.
So, I like. In fact, you know what? Normally it's Spiro and the Fudge, crime solving police, but in this time they're not around. So there's Spiro and the Judge.
Well, it's only because Spiro was kicked off the force for being weird and had to re-enlist under another name, and the Fudge eventually was elected a judge.
So they're the same people.
Same people, yeah. Okay. Like Spiro and the Judge.
So Spiro insists his name is now Spiro.
Yeah, but maybe just Spiro with a mustache.
Or I would imagine he's wearing like the crow makeup. He's like, no, I'm no longer Spiro. Now I'm Sparrow. I'm here to solve crimes.
But with like glitter.
All right. Hey, listen up, in my mind, every time he addresses the Fudge, I want him to be corrected about your new station in life. Listen up, the Fudge. We got to go solve a crime.
Okay, number one, I have no idea why we are being dispatched. I'm now I need to be back in my chambers to rule on cases, but whatever. I guess we're here.
Yeah, no.
I have to do my due diligence.
Life changes. I'm a security guard now, but I'm the world's moodiest security guard, the Sparrow.
Don't know if that's something that you should be advertising. That's not a thing that you want to tell everybody that you're moody as a security guard.
I was talking to my friend's daughter, and she said that spoopy is a word. Maybe I'm the spoopiest security guard. Sparrow.
You know, I spend my days now just like ruling on things. It's so much I can do it. You know what my favorite part about being a judge is, Sparrow?
Yeah, you're under citizen's arrest. I've been practicing that. I have to remember to say the word citizen since I can't say the word actual arrest anymore.
Hey, I get to do it by myself.
Victim here. I'm sorry. Should I call the real cops?
Oh, no, no.
Don't worry. Calm down. I'm a judge. Just tell me what's going on.
Well, I'm in a little bit of a bind. Very, very embarrassing. It's got stolen out of my boss's car.
Is it a snake? Right.
Well, I mean, look, I'm a judge. I'm not your dad. Just tell me what's going on here so we can solve.
It was in a box about yay big, yay big. It fit inside of this box is yay big back to the truck, actually.
Hang on. Let me, as an officially licensed security guard in the state of Florida, I do have some ultraviolet powder. Let me just sort of throw that all over the car.
Well, we're
here
in Kansas City. That's, know, Missouri. Well, so,
yes,
really.
No, you don't have to tell me. I'm the one who had to use my airline miles to get here. Very inconvenient place to have a crime, by the way. Would have been great if it stayed in Florida.
Sparrow, just me and you, this doesn't seem like any kind of actual crime scene technique. You're just spreading Kool-Aid powder over this man's car.
Yes. Well, and then
why is it
hold
sticky?
On, but watch this. And then I blow on it.
Huh? Yeah, you just blew it into the front seat.
Okay. Well, now it's everywhere. Now we can solve the crime. All right. So, a box, huh? There's something in it.
This is just purifying the crime scene.
You go with what you know, man.
Yeah.
Like a cardboard box or like a chicken
wire?
Yeah,
what kind of box we talking about? Metal box?
Large crate-ish sort of box.
So a wooden crate.
Yeah.
Hey, listen, I'm sorry. There's just a few very routine questions that we need to ask. It's procedure. Are you involved in this crime directly in any way?
My boss, this car, okay. It was stolen from there.
This car, is it stolen?
No. Okay. You see the broken window we're looking at?
Got it. Finally, is the answer snakes?
No. No, not that I'm aware of, no.
Did you have snakes in the box?
No.
Are you willing to pinky swear that it's not snakes?
Yeah, God, no.
Spiders?
That would be horrifying. That would be the most terrifying thing I can imagine.
Okay. Okay, good. All right.
You do, excuse me, objection. You do realize you're under oath.
I love the fact that that's your catchphrase upon investigating because you're the judge is your catchphrase is objection.
Yeah, no, okay. definitely not snakes.
Sustained, carry on.
I mean, you could be confused perhaps, but I can't go into specifics here.
All right, hold on. So was there a living being in that crate?
No. And my boss has forbidden me for saying what's actually in the crate, which is unfortunate. This is very embarrassing.
That's a very have you questioned whether or not you're in a toxic relationship with your boss? Because that's a very weird thing.
Oh, definitely so. Definitely so.
Okay. At any point, was what was in the box alive?
No. God, I hope no. That'd be terrifying.
Hmm.
Was it a vampire of some sort?
No, not to my knowledge, no.
Mm. Okay, so about yay big. Was the object inside ever capable of moving on its own, autonomously?
No, not by that sort of definition, no. Hmm.
I understand.
My boss has told me I will be fired if I tell you what was in there because it's very embarrassing.
Totally makes sense.
How much do you? Oh, was it?
Hold on. Sidebar. Sidebar. That was... Judge.
All right. Judge. Sidebar. Sidebar granted.
Judge. Did you notice the way he winked at us when he mentioned the word embarrassing? I think.
Is it something that might be sexual or scatological in nature?
I mean, what else is there to be embarrassed of?
I'm just over here winking.
I think it might be something
now,
sexual.
Like I said, guys, I have no idea. It's a private conversation. I don't want to step in your judge's chambers, which is this weird little pop-up tent you have with My Little Pony tent. But that's not my business. Like I said, if my boss is listening somewhere, I will not tell you what's in there. But if some trained investigators manage to trick me into revealing details, who am I to blame?
Okay, hold on. Real quick. The judge, is my makeup, does it look like spooky enough? I know we're real close to Halloween. I just want to make sure
It's really embarrassing to be out with you.
If
I would have known that you were dressed like a goddamn idiot, I wouldn't have worn my robes.
Well, I mean, but I'm wearing robes too. But mine are spooky robes with the feathers.
No, you're wearing an over-large Cure t-shirt and JNCOs.
Yay!
You know, aren't robes.
There's a Hot Topic label still on your t-shirt.
Yeah. Okay, all right. I don't really. We're having a sidebar, sir. If you want us to investigate, right. Then you're going to have to give us some space here.
Objection! Objection!
Okay. So if it's stolen, but they don't want to. Oh, I have a question. Hey, guy. Did you guys already report this to the real police?
It's Kansas City. Who knows what the real police are? And you know, the problem is like my boss doesn't want his name appearing in the newspaper associated with this, so it's kind of awkward.
Hold on, is your boss famous?
No, not really.
Is he wealthy?
Yeah, I'm sure he does.
Is he like a pillar of the community?
Well, I'd say he's an important part of the community.
An important part of the community? Which community?
And how long have you worked for Kenny Rogers?
he didn't take the bait. Dang.
I thought you were going to say Randy Rogers, his brother. No.
How did this get reported if it wasn't reported to the police?
I mean, we may be reported to the police, but we were sort of vague on details. Like, hey, we had a break-in. Something was stolen. They're like, what was it? And we're like, I don't want to tell you. And they're like, well, then how do you expect us to find it? And I'm like, well, I'll call Spiro and the Fudge, but they weren't available. And then I found out that Spiro and the Judge were. So, you know,
this is what I love about you.
Hiring legal help from a podcast.
Always said you are our favorite client. Sorry, what was your name again?
Frederick.
All right. Hey, Frederick. All right. Here, Sparrow. I think Frederick here is somebody.
Frederick.
All right. I'm so close to objecting you right now. You better calm it down. I will hold you in contempt of parking lot. Frederick seems like he's a very good employee that certainly wouldn't wink if we got close to something that was in that crate. So I would say that that was sexual in nature.
It seems like a fly might get close to your eye. Okay. I don't want to, you know, we both work for a family friendly podcast called Weird Things. So I don't want to be rude, but whatever the thing is, let's say there was like a leak in a dam and you needed to stop up that leak. Is this the kind of object that you would use to stop up a leak? Maybe in a dam or something.
I would say that it could possibly be used for that.
Okay.
Maybe if we were electricians, that we would find something that it would be a plug. Of some sort.
No.
Oh. Here's a question. Was it many smaller things in the box or one really big thing in the box?
Wink, 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 wink.
One really big thing. Man, the judge? What? I got nothing. Because if an electrician doesn't love it, and it's
big. If it were a pickle, would it be a dill though?
No.
So, is it anthropomorphic as opposed to animalistic?
More partially on the anthro side.
Partially. It's the human frog hybrid I've foretold for all these days. Hey, back when I was Spiro, before I became Spiro, the world's scariest security guard, the judge.
Spoopiest.
The world's spoopiest security guard.
Sustain.
Is it a human frog hybrid?
No.
Oh.
No.
All right. Hey, would it have anything to do with the size of its feet? Maybe something large foot related.
No, I have no idea where you're going with that one. No.
Just so we're clear, sorry, this is a standard form. It's definitely not organic matter, right?
It's not organic matter.
Is it?
Wait a minute.
Is it evidence of a crime?
Gosh, I don't think so. Not yet, but if you don't find it, it could be.
Oh my God.
Is it that weird fake Bigfoot that those one people made?
Yeah. Wait, are you
remember that time that they had proof of Bigfoot's body?
Okay, there was way too much winking on the sexual side of things for me to be comfortable with that being the actual solution to this mystery.
No,
sorry. Apparently, you haven't been paying attention to politics in West Virginia.
Kids.
I did not wink on the sexual side.
Oh, you did not?
You may have thrown in another word there and not realized it.
Oh.
Scatological.
Oh, my God. He double winked.
He blinked. He blew inked.
Wait, is this frozen ancient poop?
No.
Oh.
Is it thawed? Dried poop?
No.
Is it poop?
No.
Is it
spoopy? Is it pee? Hold on, wait a minute. I need to retire to my judge's chambers to review the definition of scatological.
Is this an artifact of historical importance?
Not yet.
Not organic matter. Wait, was it a giant plush poo emoji?
Not a giant plush poo emoji.
Was it just a poo emoji? Answer the question. You're under oath.
I would say that two out of those things are wrong.
Giant poop emoji. Well, I'm going to guess emoji is probably not a strong contender to be right.
I'm going to give you prayer hands to that.
Giant has potential. But he also said,
giant. Oh, you missed it. Winked at giant. He didn't audio recording this.
That's, oh my gosh, whoever this guy's boss is should be real proud of how good this guy is at helping us solve a mystery without helping us in any way. Wait. Is it a fake butt?
Giant fake butt?
Or is it a giant real butt? No, it's not organic. Is it a giant fake butt? Is it one of those them giant silicone butts that you can buy?
I think Bryce, what's your verdict on this?
I would say that they are close enough. They are in the right ballpark, so to speak.
Wait, is it a baseball butt?
I would give it to them. I'd say that.
Wait,
I'm ready to make a ruling. Bailiff, please reveal what this was.
Stolen Kansas City. Bryce, you explain what it is.
Okay, so officials at the University of Kansas Cancer Center don't know what happened to their giant inflatable colon.
Oh, of course. I did see this story. Doggone it. This was like at public events. They would throw it up there like, this is what's in your butt. Take a look at this.
It's illustrated with different types of colon maladies. It is valued at $4,000, taken from the bed of a pickup truck parked in the Brookside area of Kansas City.
You guys, you guys got me good with the fact that it fits into a yay-sized box. I wouldn't, you don't think of something as big as a rainbow.
As a gigantic inflatable colon fitting in the back of a pickup truck. And yet,
There they are. Malignant polyps. Crohn's disease.
For those of you who are just listening to us, we are watching a very, very nice man walk through what looks to be, what would you say, that's 7-8 foot tall, the lower end of the, to be honest,
he looks like the very first person to show up at Dragon Con, and he's excited to be there before everyone else, and just is showing off his booth.
Also, it I think it appears to be in service of a program called Get Your Rear in Gear.
What? No.
Yeah, look at the little like advanced colon cancer tags. Also,
I didn't know that Brian lower. Dunning had an older brother. That's pretty amazing.
But officials don't know where this is still. If you have any leads, please call the Kansas City Police.
No, or call Sparrow.
There's going to be one black market quinceañera that's going to be lit in the Kansas City area.
Also, if you have a lead, quietly spend up to $1,000 on it and just get it to us anonymously and let us be the actual heroes that just say, hey man,
we found it.
Ladies and gentlemen, we got him or her. It's not really specific.
We have found to a permanent end the inflatable colon.
we followed all the leads and all the way to the end, and here we are.
Well, folks, there's one way that you can continue to fund our search for the real colon, and that is by going to patreon.com/weirdthings and donating to our show. It's how we keep this show going. It's how we make sure that we carve out time, no matter how much we got going on. We're rocking and rolling here each and every Monday, thanks to you guys.
Hey, that was one of the better former. I like that we've evolved the characters of Sparrow and the Judge. They've really come a long way.
Really evolved, Ryan.
It's
really.
Yeah. It's sustained.
Hey, speed round. An Arizona man fell into a mine shaft, broke his bones, and had to fend off what before being rescued days later?
Possums. Curious. Badgers.
I mean, so I would immediately think wolves, right? But if it's something where he was totally immobile, it might be something a little bit more off the beaten path.
Oh, something
maybe like salamanders
annoying you or something. You said this is a mine shaft, right?
Chuds.
No, those are they would have eaten them. It's got to be like a minor annoyance. Bats? Yeah, maybe bats. I'll go bats.
Is it snakes?
Snakes!
I forgot. Speed round.
How about this? You're like, hey, I'm going to go for a walk. Oh, I'm kind of dehydrated. This sucks, right? I'm falling. No, this sucks. Oh, I just hit the ground. Oh, that sucks. Oh, I got two broken legs. Oh, this sucks. Oh, how does it get worse?
Yeah.
Do they say what kind of snakes it is? Because obviously, like
rattlesnakes.
It was rattlesnakes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Man, you ain't got a choice with those. You got. Do you think he just threw rocks at them, or actually, like grab them and snap the neck? Thing.
Do you think? I think he killed one of them and then used it as a whip on the other one.
Oh my God, that would be amazing.
Snake whip?
That would be amazing.
Yeah. What if he strangled the other ones with it?
Oh
yeah.
Oh,
God. And then he made a little. He made a little snake noose.
They made like a snake bodic armor out of all the dead snake corpses and used it to ambulate around.
Could happen. Could happen. So, nature's scary. Nature is very, very, very scary.
I put this in the list. I wasn't sure if I wanted to do the story, but somebody else brought it up. And
by the way, that's how you know that you trust MSNBC, because they begin their legitimate news stories that way, where the anchor often will say, I did not want to do this story, but somebody put it on the list. So
yeah,
here
Matt
we
Drudge
are.
Made me put it out there. Just because it's one of these things that, like, people are like, oh, look at this. And it's like, no, it's nothing. It's like a Chinese town is looking into, you know, launching their own artificial satellite to replace their streetlights, right? And the idea is they want to put up like a moon to provide light or whatever. And it's like, there's so many problems with this premise. It's just a thing to get in the news. They're like, oh, we want to, because like, okay. So in order to have like a stable moon to light you up,
they all put into orbit. Well, you'd need to be geostationary orbit, which is like, you know, 20,000 miles away. So, you know, what are you going to, how are you going to, how much light are you going to get from there? And it's just.
So there's a, this is not a, as dumb of a rabbit hole as it sounds at first blush. Like, yes, this is dumb. This is a newsbaity headline. This is a newsbaity idea or whatever. But there's a very good, I think it was a 99% invisible story about the phenomenon of moon towers, which is, so imagine, we of course now know that it's very expensive to get to orbit and it's getting better. So the idea of throwing up artificial satellites to illuminate everything is inefficient and silly. But there was a time 150 years ago when it was more cost effective to, rather than wire up an entire grid, to just put up one really high tower that, mm-hmm. that was bright enough to essentially replicate the light of the full moon. And it had real social and substantive benefits, including, you know, a reduction in crime, you know, safety. You could walk without as much fear of bandits from place to place or whatever. And they still exist scattered throughout Austin, Texas. So I'm going to say yes, 100%. This is dumb today, but 150 years ago, the core idea of it isn't as dumb as it sounds now. If your goal is to, hey, why do 100 tiny lights when we could just do one light that generally illuminates everything?
I mean, if they said it was a balloon, they wanted to like do a balloon light, I'd be like, great. But when they're like, oh, when not one reporter's like, hey, like, isn't geostationary orbit like 20,000 miles out? Like, what that, when nobody really goes, like, no, this is just really for one town, it's an extremely impractical, unrealistic. It's just meant to get headlines. That's my problem. Is there wasn't
I would almost even make, I don't know how this article made its way into our headlines. One of my biggest suspicions is always when you see a story like this and it's in a foreign country, you don't know exactly how much of it is a translation, how much of it is something that is being misinterpreted as more serious or more immediate and not necessarily like a general idea. So, I mean, who knows where, I mean, if this is just a total a publicity ploy by the town. We covered this on DTNS a couple or last week. And the town is fairly gigantic. It's one of those cities in China that you don't necessarily think off the top of your head mm-hmm. as like a major populous hub, but it is. It's like 19 million people or something like that.
Oh, for sure. I mean, it's you know, it's one of these things where you hear like so and so wants to. It's like no, it's like it's not. It's a press release. That's all that exists.
And, yeah. So here's a fun, silly idea. Let's pretend the cost to get to orbit is, let's say for sake of discussion, for hypothetical, is essentially $0, right? Like you can get something up there. And if your problem is that you need more light on the city, I would imagine once you have, let's say, a football field size mirror or maybe even an array of mirrors, I'm going to get all the scale wrong or whatever. But I suppose, and if you've heard me talk about it before, but that was one of the ideas that was explored in Kim Stanley Robinson's Mars trilogy, is the idea of basically, you know, if your problem is you don't get enough sunlight, the answer is throw up some mirrors and increase the sunlight. And then if there was a focused mirror, I would imagine once it's up in geostationary orbit, and again, big, big ask, I would imagine it doesn't take a lot of energy to keep some gyroscopes making sure this thing just keeps... you know, for twilight hours through, say, just before midnight, keep it focused on the city. And then, you know, in pre-dawn hours, keep it focused on the city. It is a crazy idea, but I don't know that it wouldn't be a cool one.
Well, here's the challenge. If you want to put in low Earth orbit, regular orbit, if you want to put a bunch of mirrors up there that increase available light as they rotate around the Earth, that's fine. They're going to be orbiting the Earth, and they're going to hit light wherever they're currently over. When you're talking about a stationary light aimed at the Earth, you've got to be about 22,000 miles away from the Earth. So that's the problem, is you're going from low Earth orbit, which is 200 miles, to put in an object that's 20,000 miles away from the Earth, which means, you know, there's
we'll assume, you know, launch costs, all that, or even then it's negligible. You have to have an upper stage that can push it out there, whatever. You assume that. Now you're talking about whatever light source you have that's 20,000 miles away aimed at this town is a challenge because how much energy it's going to take because of dispersion and whatever. You get into all sorts of inefficiencies, things like this. It's where it's problematic.
God, yeah, problematic, yes, but also like fun. Like now you've got me thinking, what if it was able to, you know, during twilight and pre-dawn, just reflect down, and all of a sudden you get, you know, enough light to generate more safety or whatever. Well, but then like during the day, it's fun to even imagine that during the day it pivots and focuses over at a solar plant to increase. I mean, all these numbers have to be wrong, but that's
where the devil's in the details. So if you say how much, what is it, you know, where's the light coming from? If it's reflecting the sunlight, then you got to figure out like how big of a collection of are there. And the problem is if you're using mirrors to reflect back down 20,000 miles, that beam is going to become, you know, the light's going to become extremely diffused. And so you're going to have, you know, a ginormous, enormous array to effectively light that area. And it just, the physics for it are, you know, just put a nuclear reactor in everybody's home and you're fine.
Do you think that mankind will ever reach a level of abundance and an ease of getting to orbit where, whether it's 50 years, 100 years, 500 years, 1,000 years from now, some distant grandchild of the Olympics is happening and somebody announces that for the first time their night games in this stadium will be sunlit by 37 mirrors all programmed to turn. I mean, at that point, the problem is, of course, you can
just light it. I mean, like, there's easier ways to light it. That was always the thing.
But like, not necessarily more poetic ways, though, because that would be kind of cool is all I'm thinking.
Okay, so if you're okay with a series of satellites rotating overhead in low Earth orbit, that's very different than trying to put something at geostationary, 22,000, which again, your mirror 20,000 miles away is not going to reflect much light onto where you're going. Right. You know, that's the problem. But if you're saying like, hey, we want to do a ring of 100 things, one, you know, every 90 minutes, you know, they're rotating around and it's much lower and it's reflecting light down there, whatever. Yeah, it's cool. That's a more feasible idea to me, you know, my limited understanding.
Especially
my biggest thing when we were talking about this on DTNS was that, hey, look, I think that there's going to be a lot of stuff that will go up in orbit over the next 10 years for various different reasons. And some of it will be smart and some of it will be good and some of it will be dumb because that's what we are buying with our ability to put stuff up cheaper is the ability to try and to spend dumb money. There's plenty of municipal programs that happen all over the world that are stupid, that are really bad, that are wastes of money. And I don't doubt that some of them will be space-based at some point. Now, whether or not this is in any way close to feasible or realistic or ever going to happen is another matter. But I do think people are going to be dumb with money.
Man, yeah, we're all into like, hey, let's try crazy things. But some things were like, no, there's a reason they don't do this, like solar roads. You know, we dumped all over solar roads when that first came out. Now there actually was a test of solar roads in one city. And hey, guess what? All the problems people said they would have, they had, you know. And it's not because people are like, oh, well, you stop treatment. It's like, it's, you know, it's frustrating. It's like, there's more to a road than what we normally think about. There's more to these things. If you got these main solar, just put them on roofs. Roofs are great. Roofs are wonderful, you know.
So I swear, this is not the hill I want to die on. But in some future way, the same way that people can criticize, you know, throwing a Tesla into space is a waste and blah, blah, blah. It was an artistic statement and blah, blah, blah. Down the road, future Olympic, you know, as a thing, the idea of daylighting a single stadium or whatever, it occurs to me through a series of rotating low Earth satellites or whatever, it occurs to me that might be a dumb, artistic, stupid, expensive thing to do. That might also be a good, effective test of, let's say, you know, when you're making your first, once we crawl out of the lava tubes and we're starting to make our first Martian bubble cities, why not have a set of satellites that's constantly tripling, quadrupling the amount of sunlight on there? Suddenly it's 80 degrees and cozy inside the bubble city. And that would be a cool proof of concept for it.
I'm, I'm not against the rotating one, the ones that are orbiting, you know, the low Earth orbit or whatever. To me, that makes sense. It's just because it's like there, it's you're 200 miles up, you can get a much better ratio of what you're, you know, you're doing. It's just, you know, when you look into like, I mean, there was a lot of talk like, oh, we should do space-based solar, which sounds really cool. But that you look into it, you're like, okay, I got to have a collector on Earth. Then I got to take that power. I got to send it down to Earth where I have to have what? A collector. And yeah. If I want this thing to work 24/7, then I've got to have multiple collectors around the Earth as this thing stays its position or whatever. And I'm not saying we'll never get to that point and there won't be applications for it, but as a big solution to the energy problem, it's a way more complicated problem than a lot of people realize. They're like, oh, we'll put solar panels in space. Like, okay, how do we get the power down here? Well, we beam it down as light.
or microwave radiation. Make a death ray that we can send down lots of energy to the surface.
Or they the proposals now are like very massive antennas, you know, running, you know, wiring across kilometerized areas to beam the power down. You're like, that's not the cool part of it. But there might be, you know, somebody may come up with some brilliant idea of like, hey, you know what we can do is we can actually use these solar panels to generate antimatter and we just drop it down in a capsule. I mean, who knows? I'm not saying no, not going to happen. But
certainly this is definitely an attention grabbing, you know, cheap shot headline that.
So let me show you something else that's kind of cool, though. So my girlfriend and I went last week. TechCrunch does these like conferences and stuff, these meetups. They had one on ARVR at UCLA. Which if you want to hold an event, don't hold an event there. it's like, you know, that's like, hey, time for lunch. And they're like, there's like, you know, it's middle of a school year. And there's like thousands of students in the eating area. You're like, oh, all right. UCLA. It's cool. Anyhow. They had some cool presentations about, you know, current state of AR, VR, whatever. One of the companies have presented, which is kind of I've been following what they've been doing. They've been working on, tech for smartphones for sensing the environment. One of the things we've seen when we've watched AR demos is you can have a cool thing floating in front of you, but then if you put your hand in front or you're watching a game, it just always stays in front of you. What this company is doing, 6D AI, is they're building using software that senses the environment all around and then it builds a map of it so they can do some cool stuff, like the objects can interact with the environment and they can actually go behind. Like if you have something like, so we're watching an example right now of like a little dragon floating. It just landed on a rock. It's going to land on the ground. We're watching a chase after a ball. This was from the developer's demos. And you can see this thing, but we'll see some cool demos at some point where they just threw a ball behind a box.
Oh.
And now the dragon went behind the box to fetch the ball.
Man, how long until and forgive me, I can't think of a better word, but how long until this is useful, like in a daily kind of way, do you think? And you that, know, that's an unkind word that is, because we're obviously all big believers in, you know, we're going to figure out something extraordinary to do with all this, but how far off do you think that is?
I think it's a very fair question, because part of the problem is, you know, we run into this, you know, we see these demos that are cool. And my big gripe is like, you know, when VR came out, I was like, I don't need to see another concert or skate park demo in VR. Okay. If these are your demos, this platform is going to not succeed for a while until the hardware gets better. Now with AR, it's like, I don't need to see another app that puts furniture into your house and shows you what it looked like with furniture. Like that's not going to sell it. I've been playing around a lot of stuff, you know, a lot of this, you know, a lot of some of these development kits, the tech, looking at this sort of stuff, and it's really cool. And I can show my friends some cool stuff. At the end of the day, you hold up your phone and go, hey, look at this is cool. And it's fun for 30 seconds and then you're done. Systems that are more integrated, like, you know, the Pokemon Go, things like this, these are more fun, but you don't play them because they're AR. The AR is part of it. And we're going to see that creeping factor of more. From, you know, like Snapchat has their lenses and stuff where you put stuff on your face. And we're seeing more of this sort of in the background make its way into there where you don't overtly think, hey, it's an AR app. I think that, you know, we're going to see it happen a lot of different ways. And, you know, there were some companies that were cool. There was a company, man, I have the card over there. They have a really cool, you know, box that, like, you know, shows 3D images inside of it and stuff. And their company's working on projection stuff. We've talked about projection mapping, but imagine projection mapping in your home. But I think the killer hardware in the short term is going to be glasses. You know, it's going to be spectacles or whatever Apple's working on or something like that. You know, not the big thick HoloLens versions or what, you know, Magic Leap showed. But I think the thing you put on your face and it doesn't hurt your face.
The closer it gets to feeling like headphones for your eyes, the better we'll be, because essentially that's what we have right now is we have AR, we have audio AR, where we mm-hmm. are able to function and drive and shop and live in our world with these, you know, if you have the right or lucky enough to have the AirPods fit in your ears comfortably. And meanwhile, you have a virtual ghost sitting there telling you all of history's greatest stories, nonfiction, news stories, podcasts, and all this other stuff. Once we get to that with a pair of glasses, I can totally see. We just saw a demo for something where wherever you walk, you cause gardens to grow. I could totally see that as a running app where when you first start, you see the world empty and lifeless. And every time you run, the world gets more and more lush and you build this sense of accomplishment to where every morning you get up and you can't wait to run a new route so that you can green up some different areas or mark, you know, bounties to mark graffiti.
I would say if you had an AR app that basically would be able to map out, like, in a place that either you know or don't know, here's your route for today. Just follow the red, like, and it'll map out distance and now you don't have to worry when you're out somewhere else. Here's what's going. Like, I would say the biggest thing that AR can help with now is, like, when people were first asking about the watch, you know, whether or not the watch would be for them. My comp was, how much use do you get out of your lock screen? Like, if on your lock screen, you very oftentimes respond to things, you find it useful, you find it interesting, it's a good way to interact with that information on your phone, then you will oftentimes find it easier on your watch. Similarly, I think there's a lot of stuff on the watch that doesn't need to necessitate what is oftentimes thought of as a rude gesture of looking at the time while you're in the middle of a conversation with somebody. That would almost be better if it's just in the bottom line crawl of your life, like ESPN or Fox News or CNN or something like that.
Google thought so.
Well, I mean, the problem with Google was that, A, that was a garbage piece of hardware. B, it took up in that little, like, stupid little picture-in-picture screen in the top of your vision. It would just blink, and now all of a sudden, I would know whether or not the Pirates scored. And it's like, I don't know if that's the best way for that information. Now, maybe if it was constant, whenever I wanted to bring up, whenever I, like, tap it, now the world, according to me, the information is kind of rolling by. That might be a better way, but we're gonna find that out.
Yeah, I like Brian's sort of jogging analogy idea. I think that once the hardware gets to the point where, like, I put in my, like, you know, I'll be here and, like, I'll look over, my girlfriend will have her AirPods in, I'll have my AirPods in, we'll be talking to each other about something, go back to whatever we're doing, and we just leave the AirPods in our ears, because it's just, like, a lot of times it's easier to put them in there and do your own thing. And I think that when the hardware, like, I've got, you know, a couple of the new standalone, you know, VR goggles and stuff, they hurt my face. And at this conference, you know, I heard some people, were very smart people, talking about people focus too much on the hardware, And I'm like, and it's, you know, really, we'll see where this thing evolves to. And I'm like, no, the hardware will make a difference. You know, the iPhone made a difference. The iPhone made a difference for mobile computing. You know, the first, you know, ThinkBooks, the first MacBooks, you know, those things made a big difference in laptops, and why all of a sudden, you know, you went from going to, you know, seeing college kids with no lap, no computers, then all of a sudden, you know, 2 years later, everybody has one on their desk. You know, these things, tablets made a...
The iPod. Yep. I mean, the iPod was not necessarily the biggest leap forward in terms of the hardware you could still put a bunch of MP3s on another device, but it was such a brilliant package that it unlocked the idea of bringing infinite amount, what we thought to be infinite amount of songs with us. It fundamentally changed what that meant on how to get stuff on a device that you took around with you. Like it was a game changer in a way that hadn't really been thought of like that before.
You know, because when I hear that the hardware doesn't, it's like, well, like Facebook wouldn't be Facebook without mobile. You know, a lot of these things wouldn't be, YouTube wouldn't have the watch rate that it has without mobile. And these things, these platforms, and we remember we would watch as iPhone and, you know, Android started to become more and more popular. We watched, you know, our stats on our websites increase for mobile, like, oh, 10% mobile now, 50% mobile. Now the majority of it's mobile. And it just shows you that, and that shapes the content, shapes all of that. So I think that, you know, anyhow, as far as time frame on this, you know, I think we're still, I think we hit the point which we would have expected for the standalone headsets, and then you got like the Odyssey coming along, whatever. Standalone headsets are as good as like VR was like 3 or 4 years ago. And then I think in 2 or 3 years, we'll see, you can put this on your face and not worry that it'll feel like you've got glasses and that's it.
Have you read much about the new Samsung device that they announced today?
No.
No. Is this the folding thing or?
No, it's another AR thing. I just saw it on Tech Meme before we started here. Samsung Odyssey Plus, VR headset, 1233 PPI, and apparently they have what they say is a new technology that would get rid of some of the screen door effect.
Yeah, the screen door effect is part of it. And, you know, to do, you know, and that's the big thing. And now, like, all the VR people are into AR. Like, you look at, like, now, like, there's big, you know, AR push. You know, Jaunt, some of the other companies, a lot of them, like, no, now we're big, we're pivoting to AR, which is fine. But it's like, VR is still will be ginormous and huge and all that. But it's still, it won't solve the hardware problem. It won't solve the hardware problem in the short term. And this looks cool. And, you know, and again, you know, 5 years from now, as we're doing our show in,
I'll tell you what,
augmented reality.
One of the very tangible, immediate benefits to AR I can imagine is, imagine if you were able to have, you know, we still have a lot of assembly line workers that are humans. Imagine what happens when they no longer have to get trained or even know what they're assembling, but they're, to them, they show up and they just play a video game, put the green thing on the red thing, link the two things together, and like that seems like that would be an astonishing cost saving measure to a big manufacturing firm.
But let me ask you a question, Brian. Yes, I believe you're right. How long is that window between, hey, we have this thing, and now because we have this data and we're able to do this, it's really easy just to have a robot do the thing?
Well, I mean, especially, you know, when what they're doing is assembling the robots that will replace them. I mean, certainly, yeah, you know, there's those factors. But in the like, to answer my question that began this, you know, 15 minutes ago, what is the right now useful thing for AR? I would say that there's, in terms of infrastructure, let's say you already have 10,000 assembly workers, you have zero robots. It is a very affordable middle step to buy a bunch of headsets and be able to, all of a sudden you're able to upgrade, turn everyone into cyborgs. And then, yes, what they're maybe building is the robots to replace themselves. But that does seem like a near-term thing that I think we're going to see.
Well, and I could see Uber recently announced that they have like Uber staffing. So Uber is doing a thing where if you need restaurant workers, you know, security personnel, people, whatever. And this was a very natural evolution. A lot of people saw it happening. They have a staffing thing. Uber works, right? You know, we need on-demand staffing. So all of a sudden, hey, I'm short cooks tonight to work in my restaurant. Well, they don't know my recipes. Well, guess what? Put on, you know, the Schwood VR, you know,
right.
Schwood R. And all of a sudden, you know, you're in the, it shows everything in the kitchen, says grab this, grab this, grab this, grab this, do this, do this, do this, do that. Like, absolutely.
like, or to you, you're literally playing a human simulator or whatever, and yeah, it's just telling you, like, grab the thing, put it in the thing, a bonus points. And then meanwhile, you're cooking for Chili's and don't even know it.
Yep.
Man, what a great way to reintroduce child labor.
Wow.
You just know. You just have a bunch of kids. It's like the hottest new thing, but you're really making ribs.
I could see that happening once they're controlling robot bodies and they're not actually putting themselves, like, if they're remote presencing.
Yeah, it's like, yeah. To no, them, they're just thinking. Playing. Yeah, an yeah, app. Yeah. You have little robot avatars, and you have 12-year-olds around the world earning coins.
Well, and the app is called, like, I earn real money for a real scholarship, so you could go to college just by playing this game.
And ask your parents, kids.
Yeah.
Don't worry, you'll get a VR visit from whoever.
Holy cow. Is
making.
I am seeing such a twinkle in Andrew's eyes right now.
Well, I'm wondering, like, a lot of these examples would go, wouldn't it be funny? And then you're like, I'm wondering, like, I remember, like, the World of Warcraft gold harvesting, you know, that thing. Yeah. And now the bit, I'm like, I'm wondering how many children's apps have
cryptocurrency mining,
crypto
happening?
Miners, yeah. Built in and stuff.
Yeah, you know. That's crazy.
Yeah. When I was a kid, I always wondered, are we doing math problems to program calculators? And I was like, this sucks. All right, gentlemen, do we want to do some picks?
Yeah, I think we forgot to mention this one. Did we talk about our adventure playing Void in Las Vegas last week?
Oh, we forgot last week. We didn't get to last week.
All right, let's get into that. Let's talk about Void.
That'll be my pick is go to the Void if you find yourself in Vegas. I know they have it in Orlando and Los Angeles as well. But it is a really, really, really – if you want – to take a look at awesome high-end VR. I don't know if I certainly have not been in any business that gives you the kind of experience that The Void did. I've now done two of them, one for a like Rogue One inspired Star Wars story, one for a classic Ghostbusters. So it is certainly more in a direct sequel to the original two movies than the reboot, and both have been very worthwhile. They've been super, super, super fun, and I kind of saw a little bit more of a promise in the Ghostbusters one, in that I really felt that there was a lot of atmosphere kind of built in there that I certainly was built into the Star Wars version, but I did not feel scared in the Star Wars version. There were moments during the Ghostbusters one that I definitely was like, this is terrifying. There is a ghost that I feel very scared of, and I hope she doesn't come back. Unfortunately, she didn't, because I would have liked feeling scared again, but it was pretty rad.
What's funny for me, the scariest moments were the environmental. It was not what wasn't there, but what was there. Like, there's this moment when you have to walk out onto a rickety old, ledge, and there's this standard 2-inch bar there, and I'm getting that cheap thrill of peeking over the edge, leaning over, looking at an 8-story drop or whatever, and then my hand reaches out to where the ledge bar should be, and I'm holding the bar, and I feel it in my hand, and all of a sudden, it makes me think, like, well, what else is real if this is real? You
could actually sit in the seats.
Yes, yes, yes. You could, like, actually sit in the sofa.
When you were out on that ledge, they had wind blowing, and there's a surprise at the end where they make a smell.
Yes.
It's very good.
Yeah, so what makes The Void different for listeners is that you go into a place, the hardware is still, it's still Oculus hardware and everything else that you're using, but it's designed for a mobile pack you can walk around in, and they have, when you do the Ghostbusters, like, they'll have, like, they have a venue near me where, like, they switch it out, and so when it's the Ghostbusters one, there's furniture, there's stuff in there, you can feel the things, you can sit down, so when you reach out and you see this objects are really there, they're just, but you're looking at a, like a Unity engine, overlay it. And that's a neat thing. And that's one of the things we've talked about before, where destination-based, or they call them location-based, LBEs, that's the term I heard, location-based entertainment, or, that's the thing where you can do that. You can do that versus the version in a living room, you could play a Star Wars type game, now, but you wouldn't have, the physical props there.
But here's the part that's so fascinating to me, and I can't wait to see where things go, is that I would say that there's a let's take the Ghostbusters experience. Make up a number as a percentage of how close that gets to something like a a Harry Potter theme park ride experience. And then think how many orders of magnitude less money it takes to, if you already have the infrastructure and the gear and all that stuff, to snap your fingers and suddenly there's a license thing for whatever this week's movie is, and it's able to get you enough of the way there that you're happy that it exists at a fraction of the cost.
You know, the challenge is, you know, Disney's been investing heavily in this space, and actually the Star Wars attraction was built in part with Disney's their MXR or whatever their lab they have doing. The challenge of this is when you do the void, it's like, I think, maximum 6 people per team. And they say it's like a 30-minute, but it's like 20 minutes and 10 minutes of just pressing buttons and a pre-show, which is also
kind of why I like likening it to a theme ride experience, because it is pretty close, where it's like there's a bit
So, and you have, I think, like the ones I've been to, they have like 2 rooms at a time. So that means their throughput is like 30 or 40 people an hour, you know? And so that's the challenge, is that like, that doesn't scale well to me, you know. I think the future is going to be more like, you know, you're going to go, it's going to be like paintball, you know. It's going to be just go get some grungy place, buy the IP, and then
I think what you'll be paying for at some point will be just the, like, a park, basically, where it's like you won't even need the backpack. You'll be using your own smartphone and your own set of glasses. It's like you'll be paying for like the gym. Nobody's stopping you right now from walking over and lifting up something very heavy. But instead, we pay a lot of money on a monthly basis to go to a place where everything is carefully arranged and it's really easy to lift heavy things in such a way that sculpts your body.
Yeah, and I could see us at some point building, like we do, like public skate parks.
Yeah.
You know, just, we have ARVR parks, which have really cool, interesting architectures that are fun to sort of map out. And so...
Well, I'll tell you what. If you're pinching my pick, Justin, then I'll go with Business Wars again. I just finished up the Xbox versus PlayStation Wars. It's a fun show. I think I mentioned before, the guy, he always does his disclaimer at the end where it's like, hey, there's no way for us to know exactly what dialogue was said. But I really love the fact that he wastes no time. The cold open is always, you're here, it's this year, this guy says this, and the one guy does all the voices. He's like, oh man, they're gonna really eat our lunch if we don't start selling cigarettes on Southwest Airlines with these Xboxes. And it's like, oh well, what if we duct tape helicopters to drones? Ah, that's the craziest thing I've ever heard. And then before you know it, you're into the story, and it's especially fun when it's a story that you remember reading through the headlines, very condensed, brought to life in a very intimate format. It's a lot of fun. I like it a lot.
Cool. Bryce?
I've got a brief pick. I'll just recommend this very briefly. There's a podcast that I've been listening to lately called Mean Boys, which is these three comedy writers, and they do some writing for like Comedy Central roasts, and they have a community where they do like roast battles and things. It's really funny. If you're looking for a comedy show with these really kind of snappy guys, check out Mean Boys.
Sweet. My pick is Halloween.
Oh, the holiday
movie.
Oh, the movie. Okay.
A holiday. You can get free candy. Did you know this? Leave your house. Saw Halloween last night with my girlfriend, and I really liked it. Roshni, what was your review? She loved it. She loved it. She directs horror and stuff too, so she's very twisted. So
this is David Gordon Green and Danny McBride. So from the brain trust of Eastbound and Down comes this Halloween remake, which is was gigantic box office success, was rumored to maybe even overtake the Venom record that was set only 2 weeks ago.
Wow.
Fell a little short of that, but still a gigantic $77 million haul for a movie, as now like the dawning of the big horror blockbuster in October, with It last year and this this year is now kind of upon us.
Number one, I did not know Danny McBride was involved, and never would have guessed it, and I would never would have guessed that the next phrase would be, and it's amazing horror. That's fantastic.
It very, very well done. And, you know, the challenge of there have been not the first time she's done a, you know, Jamie Lee Curtis has come back to the Halloween franchise after a several decade departure. There was, you know, Halloween H2O.
Yep. Oh my gosh. Yeah.
What a title there. This was a very, very thoughtful remake. I thought, I mean, not reintroduction, a very thoughtful version of it. You know, my girlfriend hadn't seen the original Halloween. I'm like, don't worry. I think they're assuming most people haven't seen it, and it's totally fine. I read one review. They talked about it like, oh, it's Mimba Berries. I'm like, no, it's not. Like, I vaguely remember a couple points from the first Halloween I saw that, but it's not like other rehashes that exist solely for you to go, hey, they pressed that button and that button and that button. This could exist as a standalone movie, you know. You know, and it's nobody here has seen it yet.
Nope.
I have not. No.
Okay. Anyhow, it's very much a movie of its time. So
is it cool. Worth me going without the missus? Is it worth me just going by myself and going and seeing it?
I would, you know, let me put it this way. What I enjoyed about it was a slasher movie, and we've had a lot of horror, supernatural horror movies. And, you know, you watch trailers and you see another, hey, I think the monster's here. And now the new thing we do in trailers is it vanishes. And then it comes from this direction, you know, like every horror trailer does that now. Every supernatural one does that. I think, you know, cause we had the iconic alien, the thing in front of you kind of thing, and the jump scare, and that became, everybody did that. Now we have the stupid horror trailer trope of like, I think I see this thing here. And then something comes at you and screams kind of thing. Like ghosts love to scream. There's just really, really dumb trends in horror movies that may be good, but just are not good in my opinion. And I love movies that just go out and do something different. Like It Follows. I thought It Follows is amazing. This is a slasher movie. So a slasher movie, meaning that it's like, it's a thing that wants to kill you, you know, and you know, you got to try to not get killed. And that's straight up what it's about. So, you know, I thought that was great. You know, it's this straightforward, you know, like Mad Max Fury Road, you know, like it's not that level, but like Fury Road was like, hey, we got to get from point A to point B, you know, and then we'll realize maybe along the way we're really trying to go. But
by the way, speaking of Mad Max Fury Road, you just instantly sparked in my mind. You see that trailer for The Cities That Eat Other Cities? It's pretty great.
This is Mortal Engines.
Yeah.
The movie Mortal Engines.
Amazing.
Yeah, I was down with all the cities eating other cities, and then there was like some other thing about like somebody's family or something, and somebody tried to stab somebody, and I was like, "Hey, I'm sure that's crazy, man." But where are these cities? How are they gonna? I want London to eat Cincinnati.
It did seem an awful lot like it's like, well, let's pretty much show you the majority of the story of the movie. I mean, of course, that's nothing new in trailers, but
well, no, it's just like it's one of those things where I guess it's based off books, and I guess it's a YA adaptation.
I mean, it looks gorgeous. Feels like a video game.
It looks crazy. And I'm sure it's good. I just was like, I don't know. I don't know if I want to see. I don't know if that's the story that I would be. If it's like the premise is like these cities are eating each other, I don't know if the premise that I would immediately jump to is like, yes, but what's a young girl's journey in all this? Like I would be.
Yeah, I guess I just assume, and we'll find out when the movie comes out. I just assume the cities reflect the character of their leaders, and that really what we're watching is giant Voltrons battle each other and eat each other up. And there's good Voltrons and bad Voltrons. And
I guess that's the thing is I didn't see a lot of that in the trailer. I saw a lot of a young girl trying to get revenge for her family against an evil guy who runs one of the cities.
And I'm guessing that you know, if you want to hit those four quadrants, that you would lean very heavily into the young female part of the story.
I think it's a book. It's a book series.
Yeah.
Like where the like it is a like, hey, what if we had Hunger Games, but it was about cities eating each other instead of whatever.
I'll tell you what, actually, you just made me even more excited as I realized that there's a greater chance that my daughter's going to be into it thanks to that whole angle of the story. That's pretty good.
I don't know. I mean, I want to be delightfully surprised, but I don't. The YA.
Fingers crossed.
Fantasy.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah. A funny little thing. I just looked something up to make sure this is kind of interesting. So we have this year, we had Venom, which is of Spider-Man, but doesn't reference Spider-Man. And we had Halloween, which is, you know, of Halloween. 1978, there was a Spider-Man movie. The Japanese, they took the Japanese Spider-Man movie and made a Spider-Man movie from 1978. And I thought that was when I think Halloween came out was 1978. So
that's amazing.
Kind of
this great.
Cool kind of like, hey, they're back at the box office, sort of. Have you ever seen any clips from that one? It's like amazing. Because they did an American version of that where I think they used some of the Japanese footage, Nicholas Hammond, as we saw on IMDb. But anyhow, funny little things.
Crazy.
Cool. Gentlemen, it's been weird.
Haha, got you, Cincinnati.
The Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.